It's down here on the top of Nuntet and Menalef in the first line. Amar Rav Yehuda, Haiman da Achal, Talata, Takle, Chiltit. The reason that we're bringing this here is because of the discussion before about the Chiltit, that the animal that has the Chiltit is made into a Trefa. And then we had the Breita from the Tosefta that suggested otherwise. And the Gemara reconciled between what part of the Chiltit that you're eating. Are you eating the leaves of the Chiltit, which are not problematic, or are you eating whether it's the drops or it's the little pieces of it that are very sharp. Now, sharp can come in two forms. We spoke about it in the physical sense, that they are sharp and then they puncture or tear the innards there. We could also speak about sharp from the perspective of it's very potent and that it has an impact on the animal. So over here, it's seemingly when a human being ingests this item, that does have that same potency. And therefore, it has deleterious impact on the individual. Now, as we explained yesterday, the chiltit is asafetida. We continue to use it as chiltit, but that is the translation of the word that I saw. Haiman da achal. So here, an individual. Tlata takle chiltit. Takal means a shekel. That means 3 shekels worth of chiltit, but probably a weight, which if you're looking on a weight basis, might be actually 0.5 shekels worth of weight. But anyway, they ate a certain amount of this chiltit, aliba rekan on an empty stomach, mishtalach mashche. He sheds his skin. Amar Rabbi Abahu, b'didi avi uvdo. I had an incident like this. Achli chatak lo chiltit. I didn't even get the 3. I ate 1 takla worth of chiltit. Vilo de yatve b'mayo. Was it not for the fact that I was submerged in water, mishtalach mashchei, I would have shed my skin. So from here, it sounds like, and Rashi seems to indicate this, that it causes some sort of fever, some sort of overheating that the person sheds the skin. So he was submerged in water to keep himself cool. So he was able to offset the problem of the chiltit. Kayamti b'atzmi. And he said that I fulfilled in myself ha-chukma t'chaye ba'aleha. That someone who's wise can keep himself alive. I had the antidote, the preventative medicine for eating this chiltit. Therefore, when I was submerged in water and I ate it, it didn't have an impact on me. I'm Rav Yosef. Haiman da achel shitzare be'e. Person eats 16 eggs. Va'arba'e amgoze. And 40 nuts. Vishav botita de parche. And 7 caper berries. Rashi says over here, garine shel tzlaf. The berries of the tzaf, and he says carpier, capers, and he eats 7 caper berries. Vishati reviata de dubsha, and then he drinks a revi'it log of honey. Bit kufat tamuz, which literally means at the summer solstice, but likely means in the summer months when it's hot out. Aliba reikana, if he does this on an empty stomach, mit aker talya de libe, and it cuts the strings of his heart, whatever that means, it somehow dislodges or causes him some heartache of some sort because he did this. How bar tavio, the ato the bay reish galuta. There was this deer, meaning venison, that was brought into the house of the reish galuta. Dava mifsa karan, betraita. It had its hind legs cut off. Batke rab mitzomet agidin. So Rab went ahead to check to make sure it wasn't a treifa because the hind legs were cut off. He checked the tzomet agidim into the junction of the tendons, which we saw before that needs to be intact. If it's cut over there, it's a problem of treifa. Vaksharei, he saw that everything was intact and he was matir this venison. Savar lamecho minei b'umtza. He wanted to eat from it. Now the word umsa is used in Shas in 2 different ways. It's used sometimes to mean raw, and sometimes it's used to mean roasted. Over here, Rashi actually combines the two of them. He says, it's not heavily roasted, but it's heavily salted. And then lightly roasted on the fire, so it's extremely rare meat, maybe even carpaccio, but over here it is actually cooked because he does roast it lightly. So it's a mixture. Rashi takes both definitions, which is umtza means raw. Here it's heavily rare, but he also takes the tzli side of it, which is the roasted side of it. So it sounds like it's a very rare piece of meat with seared on the outside. The objective would be to eat it very quickly, which is that you don't have to wait so long in order to eat this meat. So Rav was excited about this venison. He wanted to eat some. Amalei Shmuel, lochayis mar l'nikure. Shmuel says to Rav, you're not worried about the fact that this animal might have had a venomous bite in it, in that it was shechted, so obviously it wasn't dying from the venom, but it could have had a venomous bite, and the legs that were cut off might have had the signs of the teeth of a snake embedded in them, which would have indicated that there's a problem of poison venom inside of this animal. And you, by what you're doing now, are not going to know that. And now you could be eating meat that is poisonous. Samalei, my takanto. How do you check it? So it says, notve bitanura, sit it in an oven. Deiu bodik nafshe. It checks itself. Otve, so sure enough, he puts it into the oven. Nafal tilche tilche. Started to crumble and fall away piece by piece, which was an indication that it was attacked by a snake and it did have venom inside of the meat. Kari Shmuel alei derav. So Shmuel says about Rav, lo yeune letzadik kol oven. No trouble, no bad will befall those that are righteous. Meaning that here, Rav would have eaten the meat had it not been for the fact that Shmuel was there. So Hashem brought Shmuel there in order to prevent Rav from having such a problem. Kari Rav alei de Shmuel. Rav says about Shmuel, b'chol raz lo anes lach. No secret was kept from him, meaning that he had the knowledge, he had the information about things like this, that he knew what to do. Now we know from other stories in Shas that Shmuel was a doctor, and when Rav first came to Bavel, Rav was suffering from a stomach ailment, which Shmuel sought to help him out with, and he gave him some sort of drink or potion that left Rav in a terrible state. And Rav was so upset about it that he cursed Shmuel because of what he had done to him. But it was medicinally effective and it did help out Rav in the end. And Rav felt bad about this for the rest of his life because his curse did come true and Shmuel did not have at least male heirs. And therefore, Rav in certain instances would give Shmuel kavod to enter before him and to go before him in order to kind of make up for the fact that he had cursed him originally. We also saw earlier that Shmuel said about Rav, if that's what Rav says, he has no clue about Treyfot. He doesn't know what he's talking about. It's clear here that Shmuel had a lot more insight and information about medical as well as Treyfot, certain physiological issues, both with animals and with human beings, that he was considered a doctor. And here you see that interplay again between Rav and Shmuel here. Shmuel acting in a way that has a certain amount of knowledge or scientific knowledge, and Rav learning from Shmuel or accepting Shmuel's advice in this situation. All right, next Mishnah. Next Mishnah speaks to the simanim of animals that are tehorim, that are kosher. Simanei behema v'chaya nimru min haTorah. We don't need to spell out for you the simanim of kosher animals and kosher chayot because they're explicit in the Torah. V'simanei of lo nimru. When it comes to birds, there's no indication in the Torah as to which birds are considered to be kosher. The Torah enumerates birds that are not ksherim, but it doesn't give you the indicators or how to know which is which. Aval amru chachamim. So we have a mesorah from the chachamim to determine which birds are kasher and which are not. Kolof hadores tamei. Any bird that preys on other animals is by definition tamei. Number two, kosheishlo etzba yitera. Any animal that has an extra finger-like protrusion on the back of the leg. Vizefik. And it has a crop. Vikukurbano niklaf. It has a gizzard and the membrane of the gizzard peels off. Tahor. Then animal is tahor. So it has to be here. There are four qualifications in order to be a kosher bird here. One is that it's not a dores, that it's not a carnivorous, a bird of prey. They have an extra finger in the back. And then it has these two, it has a crop and a gizzard and the gizzards membrane or skin peels off easily. Any bird, which if you place it on a string, splits its fingers between the two sides of the string, then you know that bird is tamei, because it's likely associated with the dores aspect of this, which is that the tensile strength and the splitting gives it the ability to attack and to grab, but that is an indication of an of tamei. Ubechagavim. When it comes to locust, grasshoppers, kosheishlo arba raglayim, anything that has four legs, ve'arba knafayim, and four wings, ve'kartzulim, are jumpers. So aside from their four legs, they have these super legs that are actually higher up and bent that allow them to jump. So I call them jumpers. There is another set of legs, but they're the things that allow them to do their jumping or movement. Ukanafav chofim et rubo. And its wings cover the majority of its body. So here you have four simanim by a chagav. You need it to have four legs. You need to have four wings. You need to have jumpers. And then you need the wings to cover the majority of the body. So those are four things. Rabbi Yossi Omer Ushmo chagav. So this is what upends a lot of the things here, is that it has to have a name of a chagav. It has to be called a chagav. So even if you have all the simanim, you need an indication that this is a chagav. It's in that classification of the Torah of a chagav. So that would then indicate that you need a mesorah about this, because otherwise how would you know that it's called a chagav? And this goes back to the birds as well, which raises the same issue. If you have all the simanei tahara of the bird, but you don't have a mesorah about the bird, that it's a kosher bird, is that problematic? And that's discussed heavily by Moshe Feinstein in a tshuva about turkey, whether the turkey in America is considered something that they had a mesorah about, meaning that it doesn't have some European counterpart, and therefore it would be a kosher bird, or is it a new bird? And even though it shows all simanei tahara, is it problematic? Not because it may not be kosher, it just may be that we don't have a mesorah that it is a kosher bird. If you want to take a look, Rav Moshe spends a lot of time on that in discussing the issue of turkey and the permissibility of eating turkeys in America. And when it comes to fish, anything that has fins and scales, that is kasher. Rav Yehuda Omer, shnei kaskasim v'snapir echad, two scales and one fin, because of the way that it's written in the Torah. Ve'elohein kaskasim, what are the kaskasim hakavuim bo? Those are things that are attached to it. Those are the scales that are on the body of the fish. Usnapirim haporeach behem. And the fins are what they fly by. Fly by obviously means to swim by. Those are the fins of the fish. Tarabanan. Eloin simanei beima. These are the simanim of beima. Gemara is going to quote the Torah because the Torah already gives us the simanim of the beima. Ko beima marfeset parsa. Kol ba'ema shemalat geira shebiyadua shein la shinaim lemala utehora. So the Gemara brings the simanim, which are seemingly strange, because it says here there's simanim of a ba'ema is that it has a split hoof and that it chews its cud, and then you know that it doesn't have teeth up above, and that is tohora. The Gemara says biklolohu, is that really a principle? Bahare gamal de malay geirahu, the gamal is animal that does chew its cud. Vein lo shinaim lamalo, and it doesn't have teeth up above. Vitamei, and yet it is tamei. So now you have a list of simanim. The Torah gives you the simanim of mefreset parsa v'chulei, and then it says kol bein me'ash malei geira. Any animal that chews its cud, yadua shein lo shinaim lamalo, doesn't have teeth above, and is tohora. So now the gamal is an example that the Torah brings of an animal that chews its cud that doesn't have upper teeth. Now the upper teeth that we're speaking about here are usually incisors. They're not carnivorous. Only the carnivorous animals have sharper teeth, usually up above, incisors that they can use to rip whatever they're eating. Gamal nibe itle. Only thing is that a gamal does have these, Rashi seems to describe them as canines, meaning that it has the cuspid teeth in the camel, hare ben gamal. We have the ben gamal, which is a young gamal, the nibe nami lately. He has yet to develop those nibe, those canines or cuspids over there. So now you have animals that seemingly have these simanim, and yet they're not kshirim. It's clear that the gamal is not kashir. Betu, hare shafan var nevet. You have the hare and the shafan is a rock badger. The malat geirahain, they both chew their cud. Yesh lehem shinaim lamalo. And they do have upper teeth. Utmeim. And on top of that, they're tmeim. Those are the animals mentioned by the Torah that are problematic. Va'od, shinayim miktivei b'doraita. Since when did the Torah require teeth as one of the qualifications of the animal? So we had a principle that seemingly that, number one, mafreset parsa, and then it says about that, any animal that chews its cud, you know it doesn't have upper teeth. And then the Gemara brings a list of animals that chew their cud and still have upper teeth. So that can't be the association, or that can't be true about these animals. But then the Gemara takes a step back and says, why are we worried about teeth anyway? Teeth are not one of the simanim that are mentioned in the Torah. Why do we even care about the teeth? So then it says, Ela hachi kamar. This is the information that it's trying to convey. Kol beima she'en la shinaim lamalo. Any animal that does not have teeth up above, biyadua she'im alat geira. So it flips it. It gives you the converse relationship, which then helps, which is that it's not that every animal that chews its cud doesn't have upper teeth, because again, we're not looking for upper teeth or not upper teeth. That's not what the Torah prescribed. The Torah prescribed chewing its cud. So now we need other indicators of chewing its cud. Do you have to wait around and watch the animal to see if it chews its cud? You have to stand around, see how it eats, see if it regurgitates its food? No, you just look. Check if it has upper teeth. If it has upper teeth, then you know it doesn't chew its cud. If it's missing upper teeth, then it does chew its cud. So it's a way to get you an indicator of chewing its cud. So that's it. It's in the reverse. So now, kol beima, shein la shina namala, b'yadu shimalat geira, u'mefreset parsa b'tora. And not only that, it also gives the indication about this split hoof part of it. So now, you only need to look for one thing in the animal, and then you know all the information. It doesn't have upper teeth, meaning that it doesn't have in the front, it doesn't have incisors, it doesn't have cuspids, it doesn't have canines. So if it does missing those teeth, then it is chewing its cud. And it also has split hooves. So it's a kosher animal. So now you just need to look for that one thing, and then you would have that. So Gemara says, why don't you just check if its hooves are split? And then why are you looking for an indicator in the mouth as to whether the hooves are split? It's a situation where you have an animal in front of you that shechted, you have the head in front of you, but you don't have the hooves. So you want to know now, is this a kosher animal? So the chewing is cut, you can't check anymore because it's dead. So the only way you can check that is the teeth missing. But that information also gives you the additional information that it has split hooves. Okay, the Rav Chista, similar to this story of Rav Chista, the Amar Rav Chista, Hayam Alech B'Midbar, if someone is walking in the Midbar, he was walking through the desert, and Bamidbar doesn't always mean the desert. It means he was in uninhabited areas. It means that he was outside those areas that were inhabited or civilized. He found an animal whose hooves were cut off. He checks in its mouth. If he knows that there are no teeth up above, he knows the animal is a kosher animal. If not, then you know it's tmeya because the teeth are a giveaway about the chewing the cud, as well as about the split hooves. Ubilvad shakir gamal. As long as you know what a camel looks like, because the camel has this problem, which is that it doesn't have teeth, and it chews its cud, but it doesn't have split hooves. So if you don't recognize that, then without the hooves there, you're going to have a problem. Mar says, gamal nibeitle. Did you just tell us before that the camel has these canines, their incisors, they're really not necessarily teeth, they're more cartilage-oriented types of incisors, but it has something there that would give away the fact that it is a camel and not problematic. As long as you know a baby camel, what it looks like, because the baby camel doesn't have those nibei, and then it will have the simulation of being a kosher animal. It'll simulate being a kosher animal because it has no upper, it has no upper teeth, you can't see the hooves, and the hooves aren't split, but you can't see them. So you need to know what a ben gamal looks like in order to know that this is a definitive siman when you find no upper teeth in the animal. So lav amart ika ben gamal. So now if you're telling me that there's this young camel that has this issue, then why don't you say ika nami mini achrina, the dummy the ben gamal, who says there aren't other species that are similar to the ben gamal that simulate having kosher simanim, but are not really ksherim. The Torah prescribed that the simanim are chuzik's cud and split hooves. You're trying now to condense that and put it into a single siman, which is no upper teeth. But you already indicated there is an exception to that rule, and that's the ben gamal. Well, if there's one exception to the rule, there are probably more exceptions to the rule. How are you so certain that that's the case, that this is the only thing? It says, lo sakadatko. The Tanit debay Rabbi Shmuel. That will not present itself as a problem. Because of the braita of Rabbi Yishmael, Beta Gamal, Timala Geirahu. The Gamal is not kosher because even though it does chew its cud, it does not have split hooves. Shalit Bolamo Yudea. Shalit Bolamo means the Kodesh Baruch Hu, the one who rules the world. Yudea Shendacha Davar Male Geirah, Bitamei, Ela Gamal. He knows that there's no other animal that chews its cud and is Tamei with the exception of the Gamal. The Fikach Pirate Bakatu, who? That's why it's enumerated in the Pasuk. Now, obviously, it's not just the Gamal, because as the Bali Tosfos will point out, Rashi makes the same point, B'shara Ktuvim Imo. It's not just the Gamal. The Torah enumerates there are three or four animals, depending how you read the Pasuk, that are Malei Geira, that chew their cud. That includes the Shafan, the Arnevit, the two that we mentioned before, and you have the Gamal, and then depending on how you read the word Shisua. The word shisua, whether that means a split hoof all the way through, including the nail, or shisua, the Gemara is going to indicate, is a different animal. An animal with two spines, it's a specific type of animal, and that animal would then also be included in this list of those that are malei geirah, that are malei geirah, but are not kosher. But those are all enumerated in the Torah. The Torah specified, here is the list of all animals that chew their cud and that are tameim. So the list includes these four animals. Two, at least the Shafan and Arnevet are not split-hooved, and they have upper teeth, so there's no issue over there. If you open up their mouths, you're going to know they're not kasher, because they have the upper incisors, they have front teeth, and so you'll know they're not kasherim. The gamal was the only problem, and even the gamal itself isn't a problem because it has nipe. The only problem is the baby gamal. So as long as you know what a baby gamal looks like, you can use this indication through teeth to know the information or to know that they are a kosher animal, even though you don't have its hooves, and even though you don't know that it chews its cud. If you're walking through the desert and you find an animal where the mouth is worn down, it's shaved down. So now you don't have any way to check whether it had upper teeth or didn't have upper teeth because they're missing over here. So how do I now check if this animal is a kosher animal? You check the hooves. In parsotah stukot, if it has split hooves, biyadua shehit torah, then you know for sure it's a kosher animal. Im lav, biyadua shehit meyam. If it doesn't have split hooves, then you know it is a non-kosher animal. So that means, again, here, you can use one siman to know whether an animal is kosher. In the other side, in the story before, he indicated that just by knowing there's no upper teeth, you know that it's a kosher animal, as long as you know that it's not a ben gamal. Here too, he's saying, if you don't have any other information besides the split hooves, that's enough information to know that the animal is kosher. Uvachia gir chazir. As long as you know what a pig looks like. Because a pig has split hooves, but it doesn't chew its cud. Lava mart ike chazir. So did you just say that there are exceptions to these rules, which is the pig, whether it's the domesticated pig or the wild boar, all of these have split hooves, but do not chew their cud. So if you recognize them, you're okay. If you don't recognize them, you're in a problem. The Gemara says, well, if there's one exception to the rule, ikanami minachrina, the dami lechazir. Maybe there are other species out there that are similar to a pig, and they have this same problem. If that's the case, then you can't use this as a rule of thumb, because there are exceptions to the rule. Lo sakadatcha, that you don't have to worry about. The tana debi rabbi shmal, betachazir, kimafris prasahu. The chazir is tamei because it has split hooves, but it doesn't chew its cud. So now, shalit bolamo yodei ashein lechadavar shemiz priest parsa betamei. The only exception to the rule of split hooves is the pig because it has mafris parsa el chazir. Lefikach pirek vavakatuv hu. That's why the Torah enumerated it to tell you this is the one exception to the rule. Split hooves that don't chew their cud. There's one animal that has it, and that is the chazir. So therefore, each one of the indicators would have been sufficient had it not been for the fact that you have the exceptions. The Torah writes out the exception. So the rule is, choose its cud, split hooves. The truth is that either one of them would have been sufficient had it not been for the animals that are the exceptions to the rule. So now, those animals that are exceptions to the rule, as long as you know them and can identify them, then you only need one of the two simanim, because there are a limited number of animals that are exceptions to the rule. By Malek Geira, the only one that has this exception to the rule is the gamal. I mean, there are other exceptions, but the other exceptions have upper teeth. That could give you that guy. The gamal or ben gamal is the only one that doesn't have upper teeth. So as long as you can recognize it, you can use that singular rule. Same thing with split hooves. It works for everything except the pig or the boar. And so therefore, if you know what those look like, those are the only exceptions. You can use that as your key indicator for the fact that the animals are ksherim. Amar Rav Chista, ayam alech b'midbar. Now you run into a problem. Its mouth is shaven down, or there's no longer any visible indication of whether it had teeth or didn't have teeth, and its hooves are cut off. So now you're left with neither of these simanim. He gives another indicator. If it goes in a pattern that is horizontal and vertical, cross pattern, then you know that it is a kosher animal. It has grains that run in a crossing pattern, that some of them go one way, some of them go the other way. It's not a smooth type of basar. It has like a graininess that runs both horizontal and vertical. The different pieces of meat in that area run in different directions. V'imlav, and if not, v'yadua shi'i t'meya. Then you know for sure it's t'meya. V'vad shi'akir arod. As long as you know what a wild donkey looks like. Because the wild donkey does have this feature. And so therefore, it's not an exclusive siman because of the exception to the rule. It's the same thing again, where you have, it's an overwhelming majority mean, 95-99% of the animals have this that are sheirim. There's one exception to that. That's this species, the arod, that is problematic. So therefore, if you know what that looks like, you can take that out of the rule, and then everything else would be kosher if you do this investigation. So the Gemara says, Lavamar, it's ika arod. So now, did you just say there's an exception to the rule? Ikanami minachrina dedami le arod. So maybe there are also other animals that are similar to the arod that also display this feature, and they're not kosher. Now, what's interesting here is you can't now invoke the principle that God told us, because this is not a siman that's found in the Torah. The other two simanim, you could say God told us the exceptions to the rule. Over here, it's the chachamim telling us the exceptions to the rule. That means that it's subject to human fallibility, and that means that there could be other animals that have this exception to the rule. Where it says, gemire, daleka, we have a mesora. So here you have what seemingly is a lach l'moshe m'Sinai or a mesora, that there are no other exceptions to the rule. Behechi bodek, where do you have to check the meat in order to know this? At the wings of the oketz means the sting, or it's really the tail. And as Rashi explains over here, tachat etzem halya. He has a different gear, so which is tachat oketz rather than kanfei oketz. But tachat oketz is tachat etzem halya. Below the tail bone, or really the hip bone, shekorim anka, yesh basar, shekorin oto. Yeah, there is flesh there when you tear it open. Nikra sheti, v'yesh nikra erev. Some of it goes sheti, some of it goes erev. So again, it's not the same piece of meat, but the meat meets in a way, or the flesh over there meets in a directions where some of the meat has grain going one way, and some of the meat has the grain going the other way. It's not in a singular direction, which would be true of non-kosher meat, or it's not smooth. It has that graininess to it, and that's an indication of the kosher meat. So now we move on to the chayot, and the Gemara says, simanei chaya. The Mishnah says that simanei be'ema and simanei chaya nemru min haTorah. Tarabanan, elu hein simanei chaya. These are the simanim of the chaya, meaning this is the tosefta, the brayta that's bringing simanim for a chaya. Chaya bichlal be'emahi, the simanim. Why do you need a separate enumeration of the simanim of a chaya if a chaya is subsumed under be'ema? That's what our Mishnah said. Simanei be'ema v'chaya nemru min haTorah. So they, whatever is true of the be'ema is true of the chaya as well. Why do you need anything distinct to tell you whether it's a chaya, whether it's a behemah? What you want to know is that it's a kosher animal. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Zeira, there is a nafkamina between behemot and the chayot, and that is latir chelba, in order to make its chelev kosher. The difference between a behemah and a chaya are twofold. One is that a chaya does require kisui adam, which is not true by a behemah, and the chaya's chelev is mutar, which is not true by the behemah. Behemah's chelev is asur because of the fact that it could go on the mizbeach, and therefore you can't eat it. A chaya's chelev can't go on the mizbeach, and therefore it's mutar for you to eat. So there is a value in knowing whether an animal is a chaya or a behemah, because that distinction then would help you to identify whether chelev is mutar or the chelev is asur. If it's a behemah, the chelev would be asur. If it's a chaya, the chelev would be mutar. And that's what Rabbi Zeira notes over here. The reason that we want to know what distinguishes a chaya is in order to indicate or give us this information about the chaya being mutar. And that's what's meant here. Elu en simanei chaya shechelba mutar. This is how you have to read the brayta, the tosefta. These are the simanim of a chaya that shechelba mutar. That's chaya is mutar. It's not the simanim of a chaya to tell you that's kasher. That's the same as the behema. Split hooves, chewing its cud, that we know already. Or no upper incisors, meaning the same simanim that you had all by the behemot, you can use over here by the chayot. We're trying to distinguish the chaya in order to distinguish it in terms of its chelba being mutar. Kiyeshla, karnaim, v'talfayim. Anything that has horns and hooves. That will help you out to know that it is a chaya. Rabbi Dos Omer, yeshla karnaim, yatatzrich lachzor al talfayim. If he already has horns, you don't need to look for the hooves. I mean, that would be an indication already of the fact that it is a chaya. Yeshla talfayim, tzarichata lachzor al karnaim. On the other hand, if it only has the hooves, or you only know that it's hooves of a chaya, you can't then be guaranteed that that's the case, because there are certain chayot that have talfayim, that have hooves, that look similar to a behema. So then you're going to have to check the horns over there. It's not always a guarantee that you're going to have the right information based on the hooves. So Rashi over here says that talfayim means tziporne ha-parsot, that they have nails on the split hooves. Or, you see, the Rosh says that chayot have much narrower split hooves. The behemoth have a much wider hoof or split hoof. The chaya has a very narrow split hoof, and it usually has somewhat of a nail at the end of the hoof. So it's not simply that it has hooves or it has split hooves. It has a unique shaped type of split hoof, which is much narrower, and also has tzipornei. It also has these nails at the tip or the end of the hooves. That's an indication of a chaya. Rabbi Dosa says, once you got the horns done, you don't need the hoof part of it, because the horns themselves can give you that indication.
So far we've explained the Gemara like the Rabbeinu Tam's view, which is both of these simanim, that is the karnayim, the horns, and the talfayim, the hooves, are coming to exclude a behemah, that both of them are identifications that are unique to a chaya. And that's what the Rabbeinu Tam says, shekol sheyesh lo karnayim vegam yesh lo talfayim katalfei chaya, that have hooves like a chaya, those narrow hooves that the Rosh explained, v'yadua shi chaya tohora, then you know it's a chaya tohora, v'chelba tohor. Teyesh min behema, there are some animals, she'ena mitzuyim v'neinu, that we don't know of, teyesh la karnayim kirkanei chaya, that sometimes have horns like those of a chayot, or they have talfayim, they have hooves, katalfei chaya. That's why you need both simanim, not just the horns and not just the talfayim. You need both of them. Because both of them do not appear in any given behema. So both of these simanim, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, are coming to differentiate the animal from a behema and to tell you it's definitely a chaya. Whereas Rabbi Dosa feels that the horns are sufficient as a distinguishing item. His older brother, the Rivam, on the other hand, says that the two simanim here are for two different reasons. And that is that the purpose of karnayim, the horns, or the purpose of the horns, is to tell you it's a chaya and not a behema, based on the simanim we're going to see in a second for horns. But that doesn't mean that you have a chaya torah. It's possible then, with these horns, you have a chaya tmeya. That's why bina and talfayim parsot stukot. That's why you need split hooves on these animals in order to gate that it is a chaya torah and not a chaya tmeya. So the horns are a way to identify it as a chaya, and the split hoof is a way to identify it as being a kosher chaya and not a non-kosher chaya. In that view, there's nothing distinct about the hooves of a chaya versus a behema, and that is why the Ramban criticizes the view of the Rabbeinu Tam, because he says there's nothing unique about those hooves of a chaya, and he doesn't accept that distinction made by the Rosh, and therefore he favors this view of the Rivam, that the two simanim here are in order to delineate it as a chaya, and then a chaya Torah. And then you would explain Rashi's comment over here on the Gemara about the Tzipornayim, but just be in concert with his position in the Torah, which is that he says that Mafris Parsa and then Shosat Shesa means that it's a split hoof, and then Shosat Shesa means it's split all the way through the nail, meaning that it's completely split all the way through. That's in contrast to other opinions that think that Mafreset Parsa means it doesn't have a foot with fingers on it, but rather solid object, and the Shosach Sesa means that solid hoof is split in half. And so for Rashi, the reason a Gamal is excluded is because it's not split all the way through, whereas for the alternate explanation, the reason that a Gamal is excluded is because it doesn't have a hard hoof, it has a softer foot rather than the hard hoof that's required in the Mafris Parsa. And then Rabbi Dosa comes along to say, once you have those horns are so unique to a Chaya Torah, you don't need the other siman because no chayat me'ah has horns like this. The machloket will also be influential in determining the upcoming questions as to whether they're only on Rabbi Dosa or on the Rabbonan as well, depending on which approach you use, that of the Rivam or the Rabbeinu Tam.
The keresh, ava pishein lo, ela keren achat. The keresh, even though he has one horn, mutar, it's fine. The Gemara will come back and discuss what a keresh is and give us the definition of a keresh. For right now, we're going to leave that as just a single-horned animal. Kolohu, is this really a principle? Hare Eiz, what about a goat? Yesh lo karnayim v'talfayim. The Eiz has both horns, and it has hooves to it. V'chelbo asur, and its fats are asurim. So your question, we find behemot that have these features, and then how can you say that this is a defining feature for a chaya? The Gemara says, kruchot. We need them to be rounded in nature. The way that Rashi describes it over here in terms of kruchot is gilde gilde, klipa al klipa, layer upon layer,
Kain karne ashur, similar to the horns of a shur, which of course will already present the problem because a shur is a behemah. But at least he's giving you a description. You can see that over here, that the way that the horns of a shur and ox look, they develop like almost like looks like there's a layering of the horn, one on top of the other, on top of another. As the horn extends out, they have these shapes that look like there's been a layer added on and on top of the horn. That's how it expanded. That's necessary, which the A's does not have. Because the A's that has horns, you can see over here, the picture of the A's horns, those horns are not rounded. It doesn't have those layers on top of it. It actually has these notches all the way up the horn that run up the horn of the A's. It's missing this kruchot aspect. But then, as Rashi pointed out, Tarei Shor, the kruchot. The shore has that type of horn. Rashi used that as an example of a horn with kruchot on it. So then how could that be the defining feature of a chaya if a shore has that feature? If a chalbo asur, and its fats are asurim. So the Gemara says, karukot v'inon, need them to be notched. So that's what we said before about the A's. They have horns that go up, but they are like notched. They're all the way up. They look like notch, notch, notch all the way up the horn as it's rising. So vari A's, the karukot. So that's the problem. You have a goat that has that karukot v'chalbo asur. So now, seemingly, you would have said that you need both kruchot and karukot. That's not what the Gemara says. So Rashi says that the supposition of the Gemara at this point is the kasakadat chahadar be mikruchot, that the Gemara, in proposing the necessity for karukot, it rejected now the necessity for kruchot. You can see already in the Bali Tosafot, the Tema, Belishleine, then the answer should have been simple, tetarbayu be'inan. The both, we need both of them. Meaning you need both kruchot and charukot. And then why do you have to come on to another answer that the Gemara is going to give? And therefore, the Bali Tosafot say, when Faresh Ribam, again, the older brother of the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rashbam, the high bari eiz mi'iza karkuz parich. They're asking for a specific type of goat, the kruchot v'charukot, that has both features. It's both karuch and charuk. And its chalbo is asur. Now the Gemara in the end is going to conclude that its chalav is actually mutar. So it's according to that opinion that thinks that chalbo asur, how is he going to explain these two features which this animal has, even though it's missing the next feature that's there? It says you need a third thing, which is mifutzalot be'inan. You need it to be split. Not only do you need it to be layered, rounded and layered, not only do you need it to be notched, but you also need it to be split. It needs to branch out. So now it says, very tzvi, this is a very difficult line in the Gemara, you have a deer, dei mifutzalot, that are not mifutzalot. They do not split. V'chelbo mutar. And yet its chelev is mutar. So Rashi, already over here, raises the issue as to, lo yadena my kamar. I have no clue what the Gemara is saying. Anybody who's seen a deer knows that a deer's horns are mifutzalot. They do split. Why is the Gemara saying that a tzvi is an animal without split horns? So Rashi says, lo yadena my kamar, tavadai mifutzalotem. They're certainly split, the horns or the antlers of a deer. It says, v'nir v'einai shemashin korim tzvi, lo ayuem korim tzvi. What we call a deer is not what the Gemara calls a deer. We have a different name for the animal that the Gemara is speaking about. Elotan and ikorim steinbuck. V'kainayim shalem einam mifutzalim. He says that the reference to what we're speaking about is not a deer, but rather a steinbuck. So the steinbuck does not have these split horns, because deer, we know, do have these split horns. Rashi says that's a reference to steinbuck, a different animal, as you can see over here. Its horns are much more similar to that of the A's, that of a goat, but they don't split off. And so therefore, Gemara is speaking, according to Rashi, about this steinbuck. Although over here in Sichat Chulin, he brings what's called a tzvi artzi Yisraeli, in the Israeli deer, and he shows the horns over here that they're not mifutzalim. The Israeli deer, actually, their horns do not split, and it might have been a difference of location, which is that the European deer and the North American deer do have these split antlers, but what we call deer in Israel, those deer do not have these split horns. They have horns that are much more similar to an ace. That is a possible suggestion here by the Sichot Chulin of how to reconcile this problem, because Rashi is looking at a different tzvi than the tzvi that is found here in Eretz Yisrael. And Rashi identifies the tzvi in his neighborhood as something which has horns that are pretty similar to what the Eretz Yisrael tzvi has in this steinbuck. The Rabbeinu Tam is upset about Rashi's stand here. And Rabbeinu Tam says, Zeh oto shanu korim tzvi. Says, I think that whatever the Gemara calls it tzvi, that's what we call it tzvi. Da'achazina, she'en oro magziget bisaro. Because we see that once you flay the animal, it cannot hold it anymore, because it's a very tight skin on the deer, and once you've taken it off, it can't recover the deer anymore, because it's so tight, it's very taut, and therefore once you take it off, it loses that ability to stretch around the deer. It's tzvi kenu. And he says, he brings other midrashim that have indications about what a deer is, and they seem to be all the same things that we say about our deer as well. So he's unwilling to accept Rashi's distinction over here. So the Rabbeinu Tam, therefore, says that mifutzalot is not the right word over here. He says, v'hagachi garsina Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam, instead of taking Rashi's approach to say, our tzvi is not their tzvi, turns out that Rashi, in some senses, was right. Our tzvi is not their tzvi, not because it's a different animal, like he suggests, but because the deer in Israel look different than the deer in Europe. But Rabbeinu Tam says, I'm going to keep the deer the same, so then he has to solve the problem by changing the girsa, which is, V'achi garsina Rabbeinu Tam, mivutzalot, not mifutzalot, which means split, rather mifutzalot, klomar, skufot, v'rashehem kfufot. They are upright, but then they bend back, the horns bend back. So that is a distinction that you don't find by the deer. As opposed to like even the Steinbuck or even the Eretz Yisrael deer, you can see that the horns curve towards the back. They turn over. As opposed to a deer where the horns are much more upright. That's true both of the European antler type deer as well as the Israeli type of deer, or like you're saying, looks like a little bit like an ibex or gazelle. So they have horns that are much more upright. They don't fall back. They don't go back. They don't curve backwards. They go much more straight and upwards. And that's what he says. And he says that's exactly what you have by the deer. It's missing that feature. So that's what it means in the Gemara over here when they say that mifutzalot is a necessity. He says mifutzalot. He goes on to say that even if you keep it as mifutzalot, we sometimes find mifutzal to mean the same thing as mivutzal, that it means to be curved or to turn back, and that is missing by the deer. So it's in mifutzalot, b'kabo mutar. So the Gemara says, chadurot be'inan. So now we have another qualification over here, that they have to be chadurot. Now the problem with that, and Rashi already notes that, is I don't know what chadurot means. He says, agulot. He brings one explanation that they are circular. Shemati, and not like the goat's horns that are very wide. And you can see over here that it's a difference between a narrow circular type of horn versus the goat's horn, which is much wider at the base. It's not very circular tube-like in nature. Rather, it's a much wider base that is in the ace. He says, below nira. He says, I don't think that's correct. The kruchot, hainu agulot. Because we said before, kruchot means rounded. That's what the meaning of the word karuch means, that it's rounded in nature. This is what we said before, that it's layer upon layer. But not only is it a layer, kruchot means wrapped around, means circular in nature. So he says, I don't think that's right. Kedamar b'babakama, gabei shichinu ma'arot, ubebechorot, nami, gabei pib domeh l'shel chazir. All those kruchot mean that they are circular. V'achi garsina, therefore I think the girsa is, Chadurot, kein karnei ayolutzvi, shechadin lemalo. It is similar to the horns of a ram and a deer, where they become pointy at the end. So they have the tip that is very pointy, so that's another feature that can tell us information. So the deer has that. The deer's antlers come to a very tight point at the top. That's whether you're talking about the European type of deer, or whether you're talking about the Israeli type of deer. Both of them have horns that come to a very sharp point at the top. Now you have information that gives you what type of horns it needs in order to be an indicator of the fact that it is a chaya. Hilkach. So here's the conclusion. Heicha de mitzala. If it has mitzala, according to Rashi, which means that the splits into pieces like the antlers, then lodina v'lodaino. You don't need to ask any more questions. It's clearly a chaya, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, that means if the horn curves back, then it's clearly a chaya. Assuming that it's a kosher animal, then that indication is an indication that it is a chaya. Heicha de lo mifzala, if you're missing that piece of information, beinan kruchot, chadurot, v'charukot. You need the other three features in order to indicate that everything's okay. You need them to be rounded, kruchot, or layered upon each other. You need them to be chadurot, which is pointed, according to Rashi. They come to very sharp or narrow point. Or whether that means, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, that they curve back. And charukot, that they are notched along the way up. You need all three of these features in order to be considered a chaya. So because each one of them will eliminate a problem. You need kruchot, because kruchot eliminates the eggs. It eliminates the goat, which is not a chaya, has horns that are charukot, but doesn't have kruchot. And vice versa. To eliminate the shore, you have a horns that are kruchot, but are not charukot. So that eliminates those two, and eliminates the shore and an ace. And then chadurot help you to eliminate the ace karkos, which again, halacha, we don't think is eliminated from this process. Behu, demivla charkayu. And that's only true if the notches roll into each other. As Rashi says over here, that they are very close together. Each notch runs into the next notch. So you have them, they're very close together, and they run along the whole horn. It's not like it has one notch here, one notch there. It's notched all the way up, one on top of the next. So that's how you get the simanim. So now the Gemara says, Vainu sveika de'iza karkos, or karbiz. It's a name of a place. The goats that come from there, we're not sure if they are chayot or behemot. So Rashi says, the sveika is that those goats have horns that are chadurot v'charukot. That's the sharp pointed horns, and they have the notched horns. Musveikalan came in the chadurot v'charukot chayahu. So since it has those two features, maybe it's a chaya, or maybe because it's called an ace, which is a behema, so it should be classified as a behema. What's interesting here is it's missing the feature of kruchot. Rashi seems to indicate that's the problem over here, which means that the Gemara seems to indicate that kruchot is not a necessary one of the features. The Balei Tosafot are bothered by that. Why not? Why isn't it one of the features? And therefore the Rivam says that Nami Eiz the Karkuz Park the Kruchot v'Charukot. It has the features of being round and Charukot, and it doesn't have the feature of being Chadurot, and it's a reference back to what the Gemara said before. Isn't the Eiz a problem because it has Kruchot and Charukot? And so it's referencing back to that Eiz that we asked the question about. That's that question about the Eiz HaKarkuz. Again, we've already now answered that question because we already require Chadurot, but it's going back to explain what the question was by the Eiz over there. That's the view of the Rivam in the Balei Tosafot. The Rashba sees the question as being much more simple, which is the last thing we left off with, which is the problem of Mivla Chayurkayu, whether the notches are swallowed up into each other, and that's the Safek of the Eiz HaKarkoz, because it doesn't have that feature. Or if it has that feature, it is not as bolet or as obvious that it is rolling into each other, and therefore it's questionable whether it really does have that feature. Hai Iza de Karkos, Tavi Be Resh Galuta, one of these goats showed up at the exarch's house, the Akor Malatzina Tarba Mina, and they were able to take out a huge basket full of fat out of it. It was laden with fat. Rabachai Asar, Rabachai says that's Asur because it's a Behema and you can't eat the fats. Rav Shmuel Braid Rav Yubau Akal Mina, he ate it. He said it's Mutar, it's a Chayam. Kariya Nafshei, he said about himself, Mipri Piish Tizbabitno. From the word or the mouth of an individual, he will satisfy his stomach. And what he's saying is, I had the Misorah. I know that this is identified as a Chaya. And since I have that Misorah, I'm able to enjoy the benefit of that Misorah by eating it. Shalchu Mitam, they sent from Eretz Yisrael. Hilchata Kavate Shmuel Braid Rabbi Yavahu. The Locha is like Rabbi Shmuel Braid Rabbi Yavahu, who said that it is Kasher, it is a chaya, but Hizaru Berabenu Achai Shmeir Ene Golahu. But be careful because Rabbeinu Achai is the Meir Ene Golah, is the big posek of the exile, and therefore it's not a good idea to go against his psak. So Rashi says over here, Linhog Bo Kavod, you should give deference to him, Ladun Lefanav Kalacha Achi Achzorbo. Try to convince him that he's wrong. Try to work with him to indicate that it is a chayanat behema. Velola tirab b'fanav. And do not be matir in front of him. If it's in a place where he is, or you're in a situation where you're with him, don't be matir in front of him. Masho ser. What he makes a sore, you should not be matir. Shmeir ene golahu. Because he's basically the gadol ador in the golah. And therefore you should not go against his position. So even though they believe the halacha is not like him, given his stature, given the fact that he is the posek hador for the Gola, then you have to respect that. And giving respect for that, you do not matir in front of him, and you should try to work with him to try to convince him to change his mind about it. But outside of that, it would be mutar, and we're not saying that out of deference for him, you can't paskin that it's mutar, just can't paskin in front of him. So you have to do it in a way that's not an affront, or does not undermine his piske halacha, but otherwise, it is mutar. Now the Gemara says, v'keresh afo pishen lo elo keren achat mutar. Even though he only has one horn, it is mutar. Amar of Yehuda, what is this keresh? Tavio de Bei Eloi. Bei Eloi is the name of a place, and seemingly this Bei Eloi produces some very large or unusual animals. And one of them is this tavio, which generally in the Gemara means, tavio means a deer or a doe. So that's what they claim is this keresh, even though it has one keren, which is interesting because we don't know of any deer or does that have only one horn in them. The Sichat Chulin makes a claim here that he thinks that the Tavya de Bei Eloi is a reference to a giraffe. And he points out that if you look at the giraffe carefully, and the top of its head, it has a like cartilaginous little horn that's there, would make it look like it has a keren achat. That looks like it has a single horn. And that's what he claims this Tavya de Bei Eloi is. Tigris, like from the word tiger, Arya de Bei Eloi. That is the lion of this place, Bei Eloi. Amar Rav Kahana, Teisha Amhata Hari Ben Ona Va'ona de Arya de Bei Eloi. It's 9 amot, ear to ear, of the lion from Bei Eloi. I mean, that's how big it is. That's how large it is. It has 9 amot from ear to ear. Amar Rav Yosef, Shitzar Amhata Be Mashke de Tavya de Bei Eloi. Mashke is usually, can mean the skin, but also can mean the length of. So the length of this Tavya de Bei Eloi, which is this keresh, is 16 amot. The Balei Tosafot point out that the girsa by the 16 amot is a reference to the Tavya de Bei Eloi, because if between ear and ear it's 9 amot, then obviously the length of the animal is going to be more than 16 amot, given how wide its head is, and therefore it has to be speaking about the Tavya and not about the Arya. That's also a very long animal, but again, based on what Sichat Chulin suggests over here, that it's a giraffe, it may not be so far-fetched, because if you start at the top of the head and you move to the hind of the animal, you can have a pretty significantly long animal, and it would not be outrageous. Amalei Kesa de Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, Elukechem ikarye matil. Your God is compared to a lion. Dichtiv, Arye Sha'ag milo ira. In the Pasuk in Amos, it says, when the lion roars, who is not afraid? The truth is that the Pasuk continues and says, when Hashem Elukim diber, mi lo yinabe. When God speaks, who will not prophesy? So meaning that there's a comparison between God and the lion. My rivute. Why is that such a big deal that God is compared to a lion? Parsha katil aryo. A cavalry man, or the way Rashi says is a gibor, can kill a lion. We have stories in the Giborei David that they were able to kill lions. You have by Shimshon that he's able to kill a lion. Well, if man can kill a lion, then what's the big deal that God's a lion? Okay, it's pretty strong, it's not so easy, but if man can overcome it, that's not such a great thing to compare God to. Amalei lav kahai arye matil. It's not talking about that lion. Karye de Bei Eloi matil. Speaking about that lion from the Bei Eloi, the one that we just spoke about that has 9 amot from ear to ear. So amalei b'ina de michza le nihalei. I want you to bring it to me. I want to see it. Amalei lo matzit chazit le. Can't see it. You can't do that. It's too big. It's too wild. You can't bring it over here for you to see. Amalei ivra chazinale says, I'm telling you clearly, I want to see it. Meaning, your life is on the line. You bring it here. Otherwise, I'm going to kill you. So, boy rachme, he davened. It akir miduchte. The lion left its normal habitat. Ki hava marchik arba mea parse. And it was still 400 parsot away. Nihe, chadkal, gave one large roar. Afilu kol ma'abarta, ishura de Rome nafal. Any pregnant woman in Rome miscarried, and all the walls fell down. Ademercha tlat mea parse, when it was 300 parsot away, nihem kala, achrina, gave its second roar. Natir kache vishine de gabre. People's molars and incisors fell out. From here, Tosafot proves that the word kache in other places in Shas means molars, and not incibas, the incisors, or the canines that Rashi says in other places.
And he fell off his throne onto the ground from the reverberations of this roar. Says, all right, I don't want to see it anymore. Why don't you dive in and send it back to its habitat? So that was this idea that there's this lion that is much greater than what he thought of lions. And then the demonstration of it is the ability of the lion here to shake the foundations of Rome to indicate that there's something much greater than he's thinking, and God is much greater than what he is thinking. I would just say as a mashal over here that Rome sees themselves as being ascendant and says, where's this God that you have? And if you say your God is a lion, your God the lion, we can kill. We can get rid of it. The Jews, what are you guys and what's your God when we're the dominant power over here? And so the answer or the response to that is, but it's possible certain things happen like natural disasters, meaning that they have an earthquake and everything shakes and everything falls down. Or certain things happen which indicate that God is ascendant and that as much as they think they're so powerful, as much as they think that they are ascendant right now, there are things that can overtake them, overcome them, that they can't control. These things, and you see, this lion that's coming roaring is suddenly shaking them to their foundation, and he's saying, well, you know, where's all that strength that you had? That's this indication that God will make the decision when he wants to come and override and to put you in your place. So, Bayrach me'alei, idabin v'adjalei l'atre, went back to its location. Amalei kezal Rebbe Shub ben Chananya, v'inadich zeh lelukaichu. I want to see your God. Malei lo matzid chazid, you can't see God. So Amalei, ifra chazinale. I'm telling you, clearly, I want to see him. You're not going to walk out of here alive unless I see your God. So Azal ukmei lahade yoma b'tkufat tamuz. He took him out, again here, t'kufat tamuz means the summer solstice, but it could be that it's out in the summertime. Amalei, he's takal bei. He says, look at the sun. Amalei, lo matzina. He says, I can't look directly at the sun. My eyes don't let me do that. Amalei, yoma d'chad mishamshe d'kaimei kamei d'kudra b'ruchu. Amar lo matzina listakla bei. One day of a servant of a Kodesh Baruch Hu that's out doing his job, you can't even look at it. Shechina lo kochke. God himself, you think you're going to be able to look at it? I mean that if you can't look at the sun, which is just a servant to Hashem and in service of Hashem, you can't look at the sun directly, then how are you going to be able to look at God directly? Meaning that the God is just a multiple of whatever the sun is. And if you can't handle the sun, you're not going to be handling God. And in that way, he pushes away the question of the Caesar. All right, we're going to stop here. Five lines down on the top of Samach Amud Aleph.